like it might get a little sunshine, finally, after all the rain. So. This morning we'll be in 1 Samuel chapter 20 and 21. Also look briefly at a couple of Psalms, 56 and 34. Since we missed Wednesday night, let's go back and get a little running start and kind of review for just a minute. Get my clicker turned on here. All right, run through the periods again right quick to where we are right now. Take it back, bring it up all the way from where we started back last, I guess, June or whatever it was. Before the flood, scattering of the people, and the patriarchs were all covered in the first quarter, those first four periods, through the book of Genesis, and then the period of the Exodus and the wandering in the wilderness. Following that, then the invasion and conquest into the land, as they went in to take the land, and then after that it was set up and ruled by judges. And then after about 350 years, the time the judges was up, ending with Samuel, who of course is very much telling our story now, we bring in the period of the United Kingdom. And to kind of get a start into that, let's go back to the chapters right quick then, where we are with that. Chapter 8 is when we started with, when the people said, we want a king to be like the people around about us. They had the judges all this period of time here. They wanted a king, so God gave them a king. So in chapter 9, then it's real easy. That's the private anointing of Saul that's to be the king. If you get 9, 10, it comes in real easy then because it's the public anointing of Saul. And then once Saul is king, the first thing he does is go up to the town of Jabesh-Gilead. Up in the upper right-hand part of the map and rescues those people up there who are about to have their right eyes punched out and subjection to the ones who are oppressing them. Then he comes back and with the king's in place, don't need Samuel anymore as their judge. So Samuel kind of steps out of the public life as he, quote, semi-retired, if you will, here. Says he'll still pray for the people. Woe to me if I don't do that, he said. Then you remember 13, because we talked about this very short time from the time Saul's anointed king until he starts stumbling and starts being rejected by God. And that's where in 13 he makes that sacrifice because he got tired of waiting on Samuel to come and rejected by God as being king. And then because after that, Jonathan goes and fights with the Philistines. Saul's made this oath about don't eat anything until the end of the day. Jonathan gets a little honey, and Saul's about to kill his own son. The people, of course, stop that. 15 then is a big chapter where he was really rejected with the disobedience when he went in to fight against the Amalekites. Saul being rejected, then they got to have a new king. So 16 is where David is anointed, goes down Samuel does to Bethlehem, to the house of Jesse, and anoints David as the new king down there. Then 17 is the big story of David and Goliath as David goes up to check on his brothers, finds this big giant Philistine harassing the people, defiling the armies of God, and he kills Goliath. Then the troubles with Saul start up, and Saul wants to kill him, and because of Saul's killed his thousands, and David's killed his 10,000, and David's rising in popularity over Saul, so he gets jealous over that, and he marries him off to his daughter, Michael, thinking that for the dowry of the 100 Philistines, they would get killed. He didn't. He went and killed 200 of them and came back. And then the next chapter is when Michael helps him escape from Saul, puts the idol in the bed, covers up, lets David down through the window, and David escapes in. Then he goes to Samuel. Samuel's up at Ramoth in his hometown. Saul goes up and chases him up there and actually winds up up there with the prophets. That kind of catches us up to where we are now in a hurry. This is the map we've been using over and over to look at where we are here in this, what we call the Benjamin Plateau area of the tribe of Benjamin. East-west corridor across the mountainous ranges down through here, from the land we've seen in the videos we watched. This is Ramah. This would be Samuel's hometown. That's where he and David and Saul are at the end of the last chapter, 19. Jerusalem, we haven't talked about yet. That's coming to the picture yet. We've been kind of using it as a point of reference kind of get our position on the maps on several of them there, right at the top of the Dead Sea, to find Jerusalem up here. About 12 miles from Jerusalem up here to Bethel, not very far, as we would think about it there, here to Decatur, something like that, area-wise. So, taking Jerusalem as your point of reference now, the map we're going to need today to look at a couple of things is going to be this map here. So here's Jerusalem way over here. Same point. Here's Ramoth, this area that we've been looking at in the, it's called the Benjamin Plateau area here. And we're going to talk about Nob, which is just slightly northeast of Jerusalem, which is where the priest was. And we'll get to that story by the first part of chapter 21. And then over here is the city of Gath, where David's going to run to over here. So remember the Valley of Elah, where David fought the Goliath, Goliath. Well, they're likely when David's going to leave Nob, he'll come down this plateau area here to Bethlehem and across and down through this same Elah Valley where he fought Goliath and over to Gath, this Philistine city. Thinking this up here, being in the 2,700 foot elevation range, this is getting over to the coastal plain, down much, much closer to sea level. So he'll be going downhill a big part of the time when he goes across over there. So this is the area we need today for David's going to wind up, start up here in Ramoth, where's Samuel, then wind up in Nob, and then wind up over here in Gath. We'll get to the end of chapter 21. So, that kind of gets us started off here. All right, chapter 20. Remember, Saul has got one thing on his mind, seems like, right now. What is that? Kill David. And the thing about it may be over jealousy right now because of the song that the women were singing and the fame he's gotten over slaying the Goliath. But we'll see another little reason coming to play in a minute to get into the lesson today. So David leaves Naoth, which is up in the area of Ramoth there where Samuel was, and goes back and finds Jonathan. And he asks Jonathan, basically, why? Why is your father Saul trying to kill me? What have I done? What's my crime? And Jonathan says, he's not going to kill you. I mean, no, that's not the way it is. And David is so sure of that. He takes an oath and says, yes, he is. He's going to kill me. And so they talk about this, and Jonathan, of course, remember their relationship between David and Jonathan here now, souls knit together, best of friends, if you will. And, of course, Jonathan's the son of the king, and David's the son-in-law of the king by this point here. So Jonathan said, I'll help you out. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll help you. So David comes up with this plan, if you will. There's a feast coming up. The Feast of New Moons is called. And David would be expected to be at Saul's table to eat. And he says, I'm not going to be there, tells Jonathan. I'm not going to go to the feast. I want to see when your father misses me, how he reacts to it. It's the basic thing. And he says, I'm going to hide in the field for those 3 days and stay away from the feast. And he said, if it comes up as to why I'm missing, you tell your father, I've gone to Bethlehem to offer sacrifice with my family. Now, we've seen over and over through this whole piece through here, lying. More and more and more of it. What did Micah do when David needed to escape Saul? Put the eye in the bed, said he's sick, remember all this? And so that's been one time, and it's been several times. We're going to see more of it today. We'll get through the story today of lying going on more and more. So David said, if it's well, when he misses me at the feast, if it's okay, if it's well, then I'll be safe. But if Saul gets angry over it, then it's a sign he's determined to kill me. And so he makes a statement that says, if that's what David wants, I mean, what Saul wants, if Saul is so determined to kill me, if I'm justified in being killed, if it's what's right, Jonathan, you just kill me yourself. Not if your father to do it. If it's justified, you just take care of it yourself. And of course, Jonathan doesn't want to do that. He doesn't believe that's what's going to happen. So he said he would never harm him, of course, and my father's going to do something to you, I'll be the first to tell you. I'm your friend. I'll let you know what's going on. And so David said, okay, how are you going to let me know about this? When you go to the feast and I'm not there and whatever Saul's reaction is, how are you going to tell me? So they leave the city. They go out in the field. By this rock where David has hid before. And Jonathan says, okay, tomorrow when I find out, or maybe the next day, he says, after it takes a little time to see how Saul's going to react to the feast. Come back out here, and here's what we'll do. So he starts to tell him this plan. Before he does, he starts talking to him about their relationship. And he says, you're going to be king, and I'll be at your right hand. That comes to the story here. And he wants kindness to his father. Says, later on, I'm going to tell him about his father, so his family. Later on, when you're on the throne, down the road, I want you to show kindness to my family. And he even gets David to promise this with an oath that he would be faithful to his family and take care of Jonathan's family down the road. We'll see that later on. That actually comes to play in the story later on. Again, remember the relationship between Jonathan and David. They would do anything for each other. And so that was what the promise he made to Jonathan now. So now, when you're missed at this feast, when you're missed there, how are you going to let me know about this thing? I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We'll come back out after I find out how my father reacts, and I'll bring a lad with me, and I'll shoot 3 arrows. And I tell the lad, as he goes out to search for the arrows, if the arrows are on, I tell him to come back this way and look for the arrows. That's like you come on back into town, everything's fine. If I tell him to go farther and look for the arrows out there, then that's your sign that you got to escape. My father's out to get you. That's the plan they make there. So, and that's it. Boys have to find the arrows. But this side of him, David's safe. He's got to put farther. They're out farther. And so this is the covenant. This is the agreement they make. That's their plan all hatched out here. So, David then hides in the field. So Jonathan goes in to the feast. Saul is sitting in his usual seat. Against the wall, it says. Jonathan's sitting across from him. And Abner, who's Abner? Captain of his army. Okay, he's Saul's chief in command. The captain of his army. He's there with, sitting right next to Saul. Like he was guarding Saul, if you will, but he's a captain of the army. So the three of them are there, and David's seat is empty, because David's not there. So the first day of the feast, Saul misses David, but he doesn't think really a lot about it because he thinks, well, maybe he's unclean. And that would mean sometimes ceremonial unclean, so he will not come into the feast. So he's kind of lets it ride that first day and doesn't question it very much. But the second day, when David is still not there, Saul asks Jonathan, where's David, the son of Jesse? Where is he? Why is he not at the feast here? Why is he not at the king's table? So Jonathan answers him right according to their plan and says his clan, his family was holding a sacrifice down in their hometown in Bethlehem. His brother expected him to be there, and he asked me to take leave and go down and be with him. Now, when Jonathan told Saul that, how did he react? How did Saul react to it? He was very angry. Read verse 30. Verse 30 of chapter 20. You son of a wicked, perverse woman, don't you know that I know you've chosen, essentially saying you've chosen Jonathan over me, what it amounts to. Okay, he is very, very angry. He's using these phrases to talk about Jonathan, his own son, but his anger is just that kindled against David, and not just against David now, but also against Jonathan because he's choosing sides with David. So, having done that, what's he do next? What's he been what's he doing to David two or three times already? Throwing his spear at David, trying to kill him when David being playing music. Who'd you throw the spear at now? His own son. Okay? He throws a spear at Jonathan, trying to kill him. Well, this doesn't leave too much doubt in Jonathan's mind about what's going on now. If his father is so upset, so bent on killing Saul, David, that he will actually throw a spear at me, at his own son, and try to kill me because David's my friend, that's a pretty clear sign of what's going on in Saul's mind now. So, Yeah. Of course, he already been mad at his daughter because she just wanted help and escape and all this stuff, right? So Saul's got the whole family upset with him now. He's just that entrenched with David. So, Jonathan's very angry. He's upset. He leaves. He doesn't eat anything. That second day of the feast, goes out then, and he's got to go out then and report this to David. So they go out in the field where David's hiding next to the heap of rocks there, and Jonathan has the boy with him, and he shoots his arrows. And what did he tell the boy to do? Go farther out, and he uses a couple of words here. What did he say? Make haste, hurry, don't stop. Is he telling that boy to go hurry up and look for those arrows out there? No. He's talking to David, okay? It's that urgent, David, that you get out of town. It's that urgent that you move and get going now. Yeah, my father's not just coming looking for it. He is on the warpath, as you might say. He's already tried to kill me. He didn't say that out loud, but that's the implication there. He said, the arrows are beyond you. Hurry, go quickly, don't stop. David, you gotta go. Because yes, what you told me back earlier is true. My father is out to kill you. There's no doubt about it. Okay. So the boy gathers up the arrows, brings them back to Jonathan. And Jonathan gives the arrows and his bow, his equipment back to the boy and sends him back into town. Boy has no idea what's going on. He just went out and retrieved arrows for the prince. Okay. So David comes out then. What does David do to Jonathan? Three times. Bows himself to the ground three times before Jonathan. Okay? Bows himself three times. Showing no arrogance. David's been anointed king privately already. He knows he'll be king instead of Jonathan. But this relationship here between the two of them is very special there. So they weep with each other. David wept some more. And they have their parting words. And I guess at this point, they don't know if they ever see each other alive again. I mean, that's how bad it is. But David's going to be on the run from Saul. Totally. That's what we're going to see in the next several chapters, is that run, that fleeing he does there. So he leaves, they part, and David leaves. And so that's kind of the summation, if you will, of chapter 20. Then we miss, maybe we'll talk about some point there before we move on to 21. Gary, go ahead. Right. Yeah. Nixon's that whole idea, right? Yeah. Yeah, we brought it up last week a little bit. I know you weren't here. Gosh, that's all right. Been out of town. But yeah, we did. Freddie brought it up and mentioned it. Somebody did. The fact that He loved him as his own soul. That's twisted and perverted to a relationship between Jonathan and David that did not exist. That was not it. As Gary points out, I mean, if they truly are homosexuals and that's a relationship, where would the descendants come from he's talking about? Okay. We already know that David's got a wife, right? And go a little further, he's going to have another wife. Yeah, we had the lion thing on the screen for a while ago. And we're going to see it at the very first part of this next chapter, in 21. Lying again, okay? It's not that lying's okay, okay? It's okay to go ahead and tell this lie. No, it's just the way it happened. It's the narrative, as Mike says. It's there. And it's God's not hiding it. These are people, that's the way they're acting. So, not condoning the fact they're lying, the fact that they made this story up and talked to the king to save David's life. Just like when Michael lied about him being in the bed. He wasn't there. That's not good. It's not right. But this is just what happened. And we're going to see that, like I said, we'll start off this very next chapter. David's the one doing the lying this time again. Okay? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you read chapter 20, verse 30. Well, read 31. That's 20, verse 31. Okay. Saul knew as long as David was alive, Jonathan was going to be king because the people he didn't know David had been anointed. He knew the people that elevated David to that level. And Saul wasn't going to be, Jonathan, his son, wasn't going to be king. Now, God had told him to take the kingdom away from him. He's probably putting it all together. And again, he doesn't know, I think, that David's been anointed because that happened privately at Bethlehem. Father's house there, Jesse's house. But he knows it's going to happen. And it's pretty obvious, I guess, to him that David's to be the one. Jonathan's not going to be king. And that's what's got Saul so upset about this whole thing. Okay, so David now is going to leave. He's there with Jonathan in the field. And he flees down to Nob. Nob was on the mountain to go. It's just slightly to the northeast of the city of Jerusalem. We haven't talked about Jerusalem much yet. We all know where it is on the map. So he goes there to Ahimelech, the priest. And he's escaping Saul. And what's going to be even more strange is where he winds up going to escape Saul. We'll get there just in a minute. So he goes to Ahimelech and the priest sees him coming. He's frightened. What's going on here? It's such haste like. And say, David, here he goes again now. He states what? I'm on the king's business. It's a secret mission. I'm in a hurry. I gotta go. Well, part of that's true. What part's on truth? He's in a hurry. That's part for truth. He's definitely in a hurry. But I'm not on the king's business. It's to get away from the king's business there. He said, I gotta keep it secret. And my men, I left them somewhere else. So there. So he asked Ahimelech for a couple of things. He asked him for some provisions, something to eat. He left without anything. Apparently left in this haste in the field where he was with Jonathan there. He asked him for 5 loaves or anything you've got you give me to eat. And he says, I don't have anything here as far as regular bread's concerned. All I've got is the consecrator, the holy bread. What he's got is, and we'll pop this next slide up here and we'll back up in a minute then. What he's got is the bread that was taken off of the table showbread, where the holy bread had been put out before the Lord, and then they would bake fresh bread and put it out there and take this other bread off, and then it would be used for the priest then. Okay? So that's all he's got, the bread that was taken off of the consecrated bread for the Lord. So he says, I can give you this if you've kept yourself from women and your men have kept yourself from women, which you're not unclean, what he's saying. And David says, well, we wouldn't do that even if we're on a normal mission, much less on this secret mission we're on here. And so he gives him that. Read somebody, flip over to the next chapter there, 22:10. Somebody's got that. Adam, you got chapter 22, verse 10. Okay, three things he did for him while he was there. He requires the Lord for him. That's going to be important here in a minute. And he gives him the bread to eat. He also gives him Goliath's sword. Those are three things specifically named in this next chapter, which we'll get to in tonight, Abimelech did for him there. So he gives him the bread to eat. And then he comes up and needs a weapon. But there's somebody there watching all this. Doeg, who is an Edomite. The Edomites now are who? Descendants of Esau, which would be blood relatives here of the Israelites. Doeg's an Edomite. He's the chief herdsman of Saul. He's hearing all this. And the passage that he was detained before the Lord, why he was there, with the priest, don't know exactly, and he was there. So David asked him, you got any weapons here? I didn't have time to get my sword before I left. And he says, I don't have anything except the sword of Goliath, who you killed. So it's no doubt that Abimelech, the priest, knows who David is. In fact, he wouldn't know kind of where his entourage was. His son-in-law, the king, you might accept maybe a bodyguard or some kind of men to be with him there, but yet David's running by himself. He gives him the sword of Goliath to take with him there. Now, keep in mind, Doeg saw all this. All right, we'll get to him Wednesday night. What comes out of that? Sad, 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 sad story. We'll come out of that. So, David leaves then and goes where? Goes to Gath. What was Gath? It was the headquarters of the Philistines. And furthermore, it was the hometown of Goliath, the very giant who David killed. And what's David got with him? Goliath's sword. Now, David, why are you going to Gath of all places? Probably the last place Saul would look. That's just probably it. I mean, that's the best guess we got is he would go to Gath because is Saul going to come into Gath and look for David? Probably not. Okay? So he thinks about going there incognito. They might not know who he was, perhaps. And he goes in there to Gath to, again, flee from Saul. But he's recognized. The servants of Achish the king recognized who David is. So now David's got a little problem. Got Saul on one side coming down looking for him. And yet he's right here among the Philistines wearing the sword of Goliath, the very Philistine hero he's killed. And they recognize who he is. This point here is when if you look at the very first line in Psalms 56, it's when it's credited that he wrote Psalms 56. At this time, when he was there with the Philistines in the presence of Abimelech. We're not going to take time to read 56, hope you did, but we're going to read 34 in just a minute. There's elements involved in this. So when David realizes that they've made him out, know who he is, Saul Some commentators actually think he pretty much went insane. Epileptic fit or some type of thing like that because of the pressure on him. I don't think so. I think he acted, he pretended to be that way. But he starts acting crazy, if you will. He starts just scratching on the gate and letting his spittle run down on his beard like a crazy man, foaming at the mouth, if you will, type thing. And how does King Achish react to this? Had I got enough madmen already? You bring me another one here? I mean, which is what he said. I don't need another madman here. Okay? David's not worth anything. Don't worry about him. He's mad. Okay, look how he's acting. Acting like a madman here. And so David's disguise type thing, if you will, here, gets him where the Philistines then are no longer want to kill him because they think he's done gone crazy. Okay? So he doesn't want him brought into his house or anywhere around it. So Psalm 34, it is written at this time. So let's take time out to read Psalms 34. And not just because of the fact it's tied in here with this, but because of so many good things that's in it. And as you read this, I'd like you to think about our current situation right now we're in. As Christians in this world, and we look at the pressure around us, what's going on around us here, think about that as we read through Psalms 34. And just picture us, just like David is being pictured here among these enemies here and the consolation he's got with where we are in the world today. As we go through this. Kevin, you want to read Psalm 34? Rebecca, yes. You would. Good and loud, please. Yeah, the whole chapter 34, yeah. Not that long. What verses do you see through here that could help us in this world we live in now? All right, read it. Okay, God's going to hear us. God's going to hear our prayers, and He's going to deliver us. That's a big point. Back up a full down. Thanks, a couple of things up there. Okay, what's it? What'd you say? Seven, read 7, Mike.
The angel of the Lord is encamped all around those who
Okay? God's going to protect us. Alright? What do we need to do? Trust Him. Keep your tongue from, what did He tell us to do? Keep your tongue from evil. Your lips, they speak no guile. God's going to take care of us. We need to behave ourselves, conduct ourselves like we should, pray to God, and He's going to deliver us. Exactly what David was saying here about his situation. And I just think, when I read this, I couldn't help but think about any time far that goes. It just seemed like the turmoil that our world is in, this country is in. It fits so much with us, and how we can behave ourselves. Where's our trust? Our trust is not in this, what's going on in this country. I mean, yeah, it's going to affect us. Where's our trust? Where did David put his trust? Okay, a couple of thoughts about these things here. Real quick. Let's go back to the first part of what we looked at in 20. And think about oaths for just a minute here. David and Jonathan. Making some oaths to each other about caring for one another, caring for families down the line, and things like this. Matthew 23, Jesus chastises the Pharisees for their oath making and oath taking. Matthew 5, Sermon on the Mount, what did He tell us to do? Let your yes be yes, and your no, no. You don't need to put an oath behind it, stuff like that. So we can talk a good little while about this. But keep that in mind. I hope we mentioned this before. It's already come up before. Next time we're going to touch on this briefly. We'll pick it up again next class about this. This filial attachment, that is family, matters of caring for your family and how those things would come in the place of or over God. The verse I put up here is the one that Freddie read a while ago. And what is Saul's big family concern right now? That Jonathan's not going to be what? He's not going to be king. That seems to be what's obsessed with Saul right now. I've got to kill David. What's Jonathan's relationship with all this thing? He knows what Saul's wanting to do is what? It's wrong, right? His action of trying to kill David is wrong. So Jonathan is taking the side of right, if you will, here, against his father. He said, there's no reason. Why are you wanting to kill his father more than one time? Why are you wanting to kill David? What's he done? Okay, so family attachments should not keep us from trying to do what's right. Right is right. And you look at some of these passages here we got listed. Of course, we all know in Ruth, it's the story of Ruth and her family, the mother-in-law and Boaz. We've been through this story just recently, last quarter. Some of these other passages here, again, have to do with family care and putting family care above our care for the Lord and how we should not do that, whatever. But we've got just a tad of time left. Let's talk about this one for just a minute. Oh, let's see. There's one here I went to. We've already passed by it. Oh, in Psalms 34 is what it was. One point I want to make there, I think it's verse 20 of Psalms 34. Is referenced over in John 16 about bones being broken. It seems to make no context here in this psalm about Christ, and yet it's referenced in the book of John as going back to Christ. 19 instead of 16. Okay, thanks, God. So just I want to make that point. I forgot it back on that one over there. But God desires mercy, not sacrifice. And He uses these passages here. Bell's wrong. We'll have to look at them. But the disciples walking through the field and plucking corn on the Sabbath day and using their hands to grind them out. What do the Pharisees say? Can't do that. You're doing what? you're working on the Sabbath, you're harvesting grain, and you're grinding it to eat it. And what Old Testament passage does Jesus go back to talking about it? This thing, this very passage right here. And David eating the showbread off the table here. The exact thing he goes back to. And knowing that, and God wants mercy, not sacrifice. Well, these other passages here talk about the priest on the Sabbath day. What could you not do on the Sabbath day? You can't work, right? Yeah, what's the priest doing all day long on the Sabbath day? He's cutting the sacrifices. He's working. He's cutting animals' heads, I mean, necks, and bleeding them, and making all this sacrifice stuff. So, which is which? Okay? There's a time for obedience. There's also a time for the mercy that comes with it. And this time, they don't conflict. You've got to put them in the right perspective. And the bell's wrong. I don't have time to dig into these, but think about these and make note of them here. In the New Testament, goes back and references this very point here of David with his sacrifice here. Okay? All right. Wednesday night, I think it's two more chapters. Let's see what we got right quick. 22 and most of 23, about half of 23, and a couple of Psalms in there. So look at those for me tonight, if you will. Thank you.